The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with Mark Amtower of Amtower and Company, which is entirely responsible for its content.
This is Amtower Off Center, sponsored by General Dynamics Information Technology. Every week, author, speaker, consultant Mark Amtower gives you his take on what's going on in the world of government contracting. Amtower Off Center with your host, Mark Amtower.
Welcome to Amtower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Mark Amtower. I'm here today with two market intelligence analysts, consultants from the Immix Group, Tom O'Keefe and Chris Wiedemann. Gentlemen, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Mark.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you for coming in, especially, you know, considering what the weather was like this morning. We record this ahead of time, so think Friday. Tom, give a little background on yourself, please.
Sure. So I'm a market intelligence consultant with Immix Group. I've been with Immix Group for 4 years and doing market research for about the past 10. I'm a New England native, moved down here, and I was kind of excited to be in this new environment. And I've sort of fallen in love with doing market research, which is kind of a weird thing to say. But there's a lot of fun parts of this market, and I really like looking into it.
So. Some of my best friends are market researchers, yeah. so don't feel shame. Chris.
Sure. So been with Immix Group for a little over 6 years, doing market intelligence the entire time. And kind of like Tom, I caught that bug fairly early on. Unlike Tom, I am from New York, which I would argue is a much better origin story. Went to college in Pennsylvania and then ended up here. So,
where in PA?
Right outside of Philly. Okay. So my life has been a steady journey southward.
Okay. Well, you can stop here if you want in D.C. Yeah, I mean, if you get addicted to the market research side of the government market after 32 years of playing this game, I'll tell you, There is no game in the world like this. There's always something interesting going on. So what we're going to be discussing today, if you don't read it, the Government Sales Insider blog at Immix is one of the top-rated blogs covering the government IT market. They've made the FedTech magazine's best list several times. They've been a must-read for me for years, and these are two of the regular contributors. So we're going to be talking about 2017 trends, maybe at this point 2017 and beyond trends, and what contractors need to know. So let's start off on, first of all, you guys have been writing a lot lately about the FAR and what's GSA and what is contracting. It almost seems like 101 stuff, but I know you don't do anything without a reason. So what's the reason?
So part of our kind of responsibility with the market intelligence organization over at Immix is educational. We work with a lot of folks that are new to the space, people who maybe came from a commercial background but don't really understand what makes federal sales or the federal market different. And we found that we were answering a lot of the same questions. So our idea with that kind of 101 series is to have a resource on hand, something that we can point people to and just say, you know, get yourself educated on the very basics. You know, frankly, it helps us down the road so that we've got something repeatable that we can just, again, direct people towards without answering those questions as they come up every time. But that was sort of the animating idea behind that. And we have a lot more coming. So that's going to progress for the foreseeable future, that series.
Hmm. Makes sense, because I get a lot of those questions over the phone, via email, through LinkedIn. You know, is it really easy to get in and get one of those schedule things? No.
As it happens,
it's not. So let's start off on number one. It looks like the budget is actually going to fly. Not Mr. Trump's budget, but pretty much the original one. So what impact does that have on the rest of this FY and especially, you know, September?
Well, obviously getting a budget is good news, although I should say this is more of a appropriations bill, an omnibus. It gives new funding or some new funding levels, and it's really going to open up some of that money as well. So we're going to have more IT dollars. We're going to have more opportunity for, you know, contractors to hopefully, you know, see some deals, actually have some of that, money and some of those projects that might have been stopped up for a little while finally start moving.
Yeah, so one of the things that we always struggle with, I guess, in industry is the prohibition on new program starts when you're under a continuing resolution, right? So that's the situation we've been in, I guess technically are still in. We're just awaiting presidential signature on that omnibus bill right now. It's not impossible to do business in that type of environment, but it certainly doesn't help. And so as a general trend, what we're looking for is on the government side, a lot of folks who maybe have had new priorities or new programs that they're looking to get kicked off in this fiscal year but haven't been able to. What you tend to see in the couple weeks or so after a CR expires and an omnibus replaces it is a flurry of activity. There's a lot of pent-up demand, and we're looking for that now, which is great news for industry as well, because we've been sort of doing what we can to get worked into last year's
waiting for the go whistle or
exactly,
the green light.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, well, you guys are too young to have ever seen a budget pass on time. Is that correct?
I think the last time it happened on time, on schedule was, and I'm a little bit afraid to put this out on air, but 1997?
I have 94, right? But it was in the mid to late 90s. So you guys were in junior high school or something. I remember it, but and I remember it fondly. but, you know, the new programs thing is great. And I have to admit, on this show several times over the last couple of months, I've said I didn't think the budget was going to pass. I didn't think we'd have appropriations. We'd be CR through the year once again. I was wrong, but this is a case where I'm wrong and happy about it, and don't mind being wrong. But September, do you think because it's so already, you know, third quarter of the fiscal year, are we going to see kind of a flatter end of FY this year? I know you don't have a crystal ball, but just speculate predicated on experience.
You know, I think it's kind of hard to know because this has been at least somewhat of an atypical fiscal year, I think. But this is, regardless of how it ends, this is now, at least with having some of this new funding in place, really time for folks in industry to be reaching out to folks in government and trying to have conversations now before we get into that final fiscal quarter, when everything really could be locked down in a flurry of activity, because, you know, they do need to spend everything on contract now. I think, you know, you want to make sure you're making your connections, doing your outreach right now and not waiting for that. Because that's going to be key. They're going to be too busy this last quarter to really, you know, have a lot of time to engage with industry.
Yeah, so I don't want to sound a little too pessimistic, but I think there are two kind of unusual factors here. The first is that this is a late omnibus. We generally, in years where we have omnibus appropriations bills, we get them much earlier than we did this year. And I'll say as well, I was right there with you. I was anticipating a full year CR. Partly because of how late into the year we were. So in many cases, a lot of our customers, and when we talk about customers, we're mostly talking about, you know, program managers, folks in acquisition, they're going to be looking for year-end spend now as well as working through their FY18 requests at the same time, and they can only do so much in a day. So you've got people with maybe divided attention a little bit that might act as a suppressant. That said, we've dealt with this before. Omnibus is coming later on in the fiscal year, and it doesn't seem to affect the overall market all that much. I would anticipate that there will be, you know, we may be slightly flat, but not appreciably flat.
Okay. We're going to take our first break. You're listening to AmTower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm here with Chris Wiederman and Tom O'Keefe, both market intelligence consultants at Immix Group, and we'll be back right after this. Welcome back to AmTower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Mark AmTower. I'm here with Chris Wiederman and Tom O'Keefe, both market intelligence consultants at the Immix Group. You can find their stuff, Immix Group, immixgroup.com. Click on the resources, look for the blog. The blog is Government Sales Insider. There's a ton of information at the Immix site. I use the their website as examples in my subject matter expert classes, in the government marketing best practices classes, and in my books. So lots of information there. Start with a blog, though. Look for these guys. And let's start with DHS. Now that the floodgates are open, what's going to happen?
Yeah, well, I think there's a lot of new and potentially interesting opportunity at DHS coming up. Certainly one of the, I don't want to call it a concession, but one of the points of agreement that was made as a part of the budget deal was that we would see a lot more investment in technology along the Southwest border. So you're going to see a lot of new investment around sensors, around potentially additional mobile capabilities down there to enable border agents to more rapidly get around and have stronger networking. So that's going to be one of the key new sources of opportunity in DHS going forward. I think we're also just going to see also probably an uptick in general law enforcement activities. I know originally the budget blueprint that was put out for FY17 by the Trump administration called for cuts in places like the Coast Guard. I don't really foresee that happening. The Coast Guard's mission is really way too important to see their cuts.
Drug interdiction among them.
right. Search and rescue, they do a lot. So I don't really see their budget getting impacted. And if anything, in years past, I believe they've been told that they will see some increased appropriations from folks in Congress. So again, I think Coast Guard is a great place to look as well. Certainly, I think there's going to be opportunity in immigration and customs enforcement, obviously an increase in detention beds. There's could be a lot going around there. There needs to be a health record for everyone pulled into the ICE environment. So there could be some health IT opportunities at ICE as well going forward.
Cool. Any thoughts on that one?
I'll admit DHS is not my particular bailiwick. I don't have much to add there.
Okay. Well, then let's bop over to VA, which is one of yours.
True.
So what's cooking there? They're in the news perpetually and
sure.
Usually not for good reasons.
Sure.
Yeah.
That's exactly right. And in a lot of ways, both the challenges and I guess the broader programs that they're working on are pretty much the same. We all kind of know the issues that have faced the VA in the last, I was going to say 5 years, but longer than that, claims backlogs, many, many security issues. The list sort of goes on. And they're working on, again, in a lot of ways, broadly similar things to try and address those issues. The one thing that where the VA, I think, really stands to gain is that it, along with Homeland Security, was the only civilian agency in the FY18 budget request to receive a net funding increase. And that's because it was a huge feature of the Trump campaign. There were a lot of promises made about treatment of veterans, promises which, if kind of followed through on, would suggest a lot of investment in areas that, although they have been focused on in the past, they haven't always received the amount of funding that you might think they need. So the big focus there is on health. The Health Administration, obviously the largest component of VA, and we actually had an event at our offices earlier this week talking about the Internet of Things, and part of that panel was discussing connected medical devices at the VA. That's been a significant area of investment, both in the devices themselves and in the infrastructure to support them, networking, security at the device level, all that type of stuff. And that will continue. If anything, that will expand. But what we heard a lot of on the campaign trail, again, were promises that suggest an expanding benefits portfolio. Things like dealing with veteran homelessness, dealing with veteran suicide prevention, a lot of that would lead to, based on the way the budget breaks down, would lead to more investment at the Veterans Benefits Administration, which has been kind of on the back burner from an industry focus standpoint, because outside of VBMS, they don't manage a huge technology portfolio.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's likely to change.
Okay.
Yeah, I think the other interesting thing that we could be seeing at VA is the conversation around the electronic health record. There's been a lot of back and forth. They've had Vista in place for years as their electronic health record, and a lot of VA practitioners are very happy with it. But I know that it could potentially cause some pain points, so there has been real conversations around looking at a commercial health record. I think they're watching very closely maybe what DOD is doing with their electronic health record, and if they're going to have successes there that can be replicated at the VA, that is something that they are watching very closely moving forward. So that's another big thing that industry is going to want to stay on top of.
And at the same time, they're expanding sort of the portfolio of health. Let's say they're expanding the health platform. So Vista, of course, is the part of this that's been in the news lately for a variety of reasons, some good, some bad. But this concept of the digital health platform that's been coming out of VA headquarters in collaboration with VHA pretty dramatically expands on the scope of offerings that Central OINT wants to manage in order to better provide healthcare to veterans. So EHR is a part of that, but they're also looking at centralizing and standardizing on a financial management platform, bringing in some CRM capabilities and kind of a wrapper around that to better deal with veteran interactions. So the health space is worth watching for more than just Vista, I think.
Yeah, but haven't there been for years now conversations on the Hill and elsewhere about the inability of DOD records to import into VA to make that conversation somewhat more seamless?
Well, they had they were writing in the appropriations bills that they were passing that VA would only get 25% of the funding that they had requested until they delivered to Congress a plan that basically said how we're going to do this interoperability thing with DOD. I think they've overcome a lot of those challenges, and I think interoperability is in a much stronger place than it was a couple of years ago. But it did take a little bit of Congress kind of putting their foot down a bit and saying, you know, we need to see a roadmap from you on how you actually are going to do this before we're going to commit to giving you all the funds to do it.
Okay.
And that interoperability question is another reason I think that the VA are very interested observers in the commercial EHR solution that DOD are looking at, because, you know, we remember the work that the Interagency Program Office, the IPO, was doing a few years ago, you know, essentially trying to retroactively engineer a connection between VA's EHR system and what was then the custom-built DOD one. If DOD now shelves that and moves into a commercial solution, then you've got a whole new interoperability challenge that will have to be addressed.
Okay.
Yeah, and I know that's actually been one thing that Dr. David Shulkin, who is the new secretary of the VA, shout out to him. He's from my alma mater, Hampshire College, so we're standing strong. But the you know, that is something that Dr. Shulkin has been talking about a lot, not only enabling that exchange of information between the VA and DOD, but also sharing it with commercial health providers, especially if it makes it easier for veterans to get the care they need by going to a commercial provider. That is something that I think certainly the Trump administration is very pro on, and that's certainly something that I've heard Dr. Shulkin in person mention as being a goal of his. So I think you're going to see that interoperability and that secure information exchange really being important. It's going to go outside of just the government umbrella. We're now going into broader healthcare information sharing. So there's a lot of technical challenges around that that I think the VA is certainly always going to look for help with.
Okay. Now, I'm going to backtrack a little bit here, and we'll start with VA. Which of the contracts are going to be accessed, or are they going to stand up anything new for this? So from a contractor side, what would we be looking at for VA?
Well, one of the big new vehicles that was awarded that is going to help with just IT transformation in general at the VA was a cloud contract that will help them move their systems onto more of a cloud-based platform. You know, we've heard some folks in the VA say they're using much older systems that they'd like to have modernized and updated. So they did just award to a systems integrator a cloud migration contract. So I think certainly look to that one. That's going to be important going forward. The other was, what was it, Next Gen?
T4 Next Gen, yeah.
T4 Next Gen.
Do you want to talk about sort of the major in-house integration IDIQ that. That's obviously the follow-on from the original T4 contract, which saw a significant amount of sort of development dollars flow through it over its lifespan. We expect to see the same coming out of NextGen. Okay. Outside of that, you know, the standard GWAX we expect to see use. So the cloud contract that Tom mentioned was actually awarded as a task order against CIOCS, the NITAC vehicle. Other than that, you know, soup obviously is popular there and will likely continue to be. And, you know, we always see activity on schedule.
Yeah. When you say you see activity on schedule, is that more transactional or is it more aligned with the CIOCS cloud action?
I would say it's more contractual. You know, there's from at least what I've seen, and Chris certainly has covered the VA more recently than I have. You know, GSA 70 is kind of just you know, used to buy IT technology and IT products when it's sort of necessary. I think we see more of the you know, BPAs coming out under some of the you know, different vehicles like the cloud contract that we were talking about, or with some of the other work that's being done. They had a technology product acquisition contract called the Commodity Enterprise Contract that they did leverage a little bit, and I believe that contract might still be active, but that is certainly not as popular as something like SOUP or GSA 70 right now.
Okay. Thoughts or?
No, that all sounds about right. Okay. Although I should mention that now that I'm thinking about it, I misspoke earlier. I meant CIOSP3, not CS.
I thought it would be SP3 because CS is more like soup.
More product.
Yeah. So, all right, we're going to take a break. You're listening to AmTower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com, 1500 AM. We shall return after this. Welcome back to AmTower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com, 1500 AM. I'm here today with Chris Wiederman and Tom O'Keefe, both of Immix Groups, both involved in market intel, which is why they're here. So let's backtrack again. Let's talk about, you talked about what's going on at DHS. Same question. What contracts are going to be most popular for expanding use across all of their stovepipes?
Definitely. So there's actually a lot of activity at DHS in terms of contracts. And I don't want to say there's a lot up in the air, but we heard Soraya Carrera speak. She's the chief procurement officer over there. And she has basically said that DHS is going to look to use the best contract vehicle possible to meet the mission needs. That might include standing up new DHS vehicles, or it might include greater reliance on some of the major GSA GWACs. Alliant 2 certainly is a popular one. They also committed to putting some business through the OASIS GWAC. So I think DHS is certainly going to do a lot with those two vehicles moving forward. And then you've got the more specific ones focused really around cybersecurity. So there's two that are really of paramount importance. One is the Domino contract, which is all about updating Einstein, which everyone hears about, Einstein 3A. So that's going to be a contract to look towards. But the other major vehicle certainly is continuous diagnostics and mitigation. And that's been certainly going as a BPA for quite a few years. And now we're having some real conversations around transforming the BPA into a special item number on GSA Schedule 70. So they're going to be creating CDM cybersecurity SINs on schedule and allowing folks to buy the product and services that they need off of that. And some of the hope is that it'll make it a somewhat easier contractual process from the government end of the house, that they'll be able to, in a more agile and quick manner, actually get the tools that they need when they need them. So they won't have to be locked into a longer procurement process. There's conversations ongoing about that. There's industry days that are still happening. And I think that strategy is still evolving. They do want to fast track these SINs and get them set up sometime this summer. I think we're all hopeful to see those being developed, but that's certainly a major ongoing conversation that industry is definitely going to want to follow, because there could be a lot of cyber opportunity via those new SINs that are being set up.
And that transition, obviously something that we're tracking very closely. We have worked in the CDM program and hope to continue to do so in the future. But something that I think is primarily aimed at addressing concerns on the government side, and that's why it's sort of interesting to us, because it's been, or at least as a personal observation, my experience that sometimes contracting and acquisition are more at loggerheads than they are working together. But here it seems like there was a real complaint on the acquisition side that CDM was just difficult to use, and in many cases,
Soup was a big player. You guys are mm-hmm. on Soup, but. Mm-hmm. Between Soup 4 and Soup 5, there was more activity there than on the CDM BPA. Mm-hmm. So there are choices. You know,
right.
CIOCS was used as well, but not quite to the same degree.
Right. And I mean, especially with something as critical as cybersecurity, government is really going to buy it however, you know, in the quickest way, in the most effective way for them. They're going to look to bring that in, because securing systems is of paramount importance. So if it's difficult to take it down a particular vehicle, I think there's always some willingness to have conversations. And especially as you get alignment among the procurement and the program side of the house on this is something that we need to take action on, that generally means that they're going to be flexible in how they can bring tools in-house to secure systems, because they can't have another issue like the OMB breach. I mean, that can't happen again. So now
it's gonna.
We know that. Shouldn't. We yeah. have to be right. Well, and you know, we always hear our government speakers say we have to be right 100% of the time. The bad guy needs to get it right once.
Yeah. Well, and that's true. And the fact that they stood up the CDM BPA was a big part of helping that reach that 100% goal, but you're never going to be 100%. Sure.
Right.
Just not going to happen.
Right. And some of what we've heard as some of the issues with CDM is, you know, and NCPS as well, is you're only really going to be able to identify the threats that you already kind of know about. So the threat signatures that you've already identified, those are really what get stopped. But it's the new types of threats getting into the networks that everyone's worried about, because they might be able to slide in a way that we're not aware of yet.
Well, there's a major phishing thing going on this past week or so.
Right, with Google. Yeah, that was a huge thing. It looked exactly like a Google login page, but it took and gathered all your login information and sent it off somewhere else. We don't know where, but... And certainly quite a few folks were caught up with that.
Putin.
So yeah.
that's my guess.
And this is the sort of final thought here. This is an issue that combines two very noticeable, again, pledges that were made during the campaign. There was heavy focus on cybersecurity, and there was heavy focus more kind of between the lines, and as we start to hear more about the management agenda, this becomes clearer. I think there is going to be a real emphasis at the highest levels at OMB and in the White House on streamlining acquisition. I do believe that they're looking to carry that forward as much as they can. And so it's possible that we're seeing kind of the first rumblings of that already. Now, the move...
Is it going to be done via tweet?
Well, look, you can never rule that out, right? But what's more streamlined than 140-character contract?
Well, there you go.
Right.
Be interesting to see the RFPs on that one. But so backtracking one quick time now, NASA, you were talking about what's going to happen to NASA. What, I mean, Soup, obviously, mm-hmm. if they need mm-hmm. more products, but what other vehicles are they going to access?
So NASA has used a couple of different vehicles. There were the I-3P contracts that were put into place. East-West Prime, which was the cloud vehicle, and then ACES. And ACES has had some challenge, and it's kind of made, I think, the cybersecurity environment at NASA a place that could be ripe for disruption right now. So certainly, if you want to talk cybersecurity at NASA, this might be a good time. I think also, if you're looking at some of the other things going on at NASA, certainly a continued move towards the cloud. And, you know, how, so they use the West Prime vehicle which was, I believe, based out of Goddard, to actually do a lot of cloud migration. But now really comes the sort of the next phase of the question is what's, you know, are they going to have a West Prime 2? Are we looking towards other ways of doing cloud migration? I mean, NASA has really been one of the leaders in government in doing a lot of development in the cloud. So I think they're certainly an agency to watch and see the strategies and approaches that they take. We may see those strategies mirrored at other agencies as well. I think you're also going to obviously have a focus on big data and analytics. I know that's a buzzword that really gets thrown around a lot. But NASA, I think, is going to do some interesting things, particularly along the lines of how you know, their personnel are conducting their day-to-day jobs and identifying efficiencies in a scientific or engineering process or even a back-end business system. NASA is really trying to look at sort of those people-centered analytics and using that to sort of transform their workplace and kind of take the next steps into what's a workforce of the future going to look like.
And, you know, Tom's right to point out the sort of leadership role that NASA has had in cloud adoption or cloud use, at least in the civilian space. What I think will be interesting is to see how much what they do is mirrored elsewhere. So if it is, and, you know, there is a tendency to kind of copy what works,
right,
then you might look
let somebody else bleed.
Sure. Then you might look for SOUP to see more sort of NASA-type cloud transactions where they use this kind of not quite a pure consumption-based model, but closer to it than anyone else has been able to figure out. Interestingly, one of their major cloud leads, one of their biggest cloud customers when she was at NASA, Roopangi Kadakia, is now heading up the cloud strategy initiative at VA. So we're looking to that to kind of influence the direction that VA ends up taking as well.
Cool. You're listening to AmTower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I shall return with Chris and Tom after this. Welcome back to AmTower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Again, I'm here with Tom O'Keefe and Chris Wiederman of Immix Group. Find the blog at Immix, I-M-M-I-X Group, all one word, immixgroup.com. Click on the resources. Look for the Government Sales Insider. It's really, really a treasure trove of information for both feds and for industry. So spend some time there. Mobile. Who wants to take lead on mobile spending and related issues?
Sure. So I'll take that one. So, you know, I think we're in a kind of exciting time for mobility. I think a lot of the early growing pains that we had around BYOD, mobile device management, I think a lot of that's really starting to be worked out. So now we can move on to some of the, you know, next new exciting things with mobile technologies. I think we're going to see pretty aggressive growth in mobile technology, particularly mobile security, over the next couple of years. I think that's going to be a really great opportunity in the federal government. And there's going to be, I think, a lot of conversations, I think, looking at what census is going to do with, you know, the 2020 decennial census. That's going to be really an interesting program to watch. But I think you're also...
Is that a huge opportunity on the vendor side, or is that pretty much queued up at this point?
A lot of the business there is spoken for, although this specifically the mobile piece and the sort of broader field infrastructure is still, I believe, in the final stages of source selection. So we're still waiting to hear what direction they go in there.
Yeah, and that certainly vendors should keep an eye out on how that starts to develop. But, you know, we are also seeing a lot of interesting conversations with folks asking, how do I do derived credentials? How do I make sure that, you know, I make it easy for my government worker to access the systems that they need, but also make sure that I know that it's the right person accessing this system from their mobile device? How do we sort of balance the concerns of not necessarily ease of use, but being able to execute the mission with the security concerns? We're seeing, you know, federal workers be more untethered than ever from their desks. They're able to, you know, work remote. They're having to work in the field. They're doing all these unique and exciting types of projects out there in the field. And so how do we make sure that they still have secure access to the centralized systems that they need? That's one of the biggest areas of concern for government program managers on the mobility side of the house. And I think it's going to drive really a lot of what they're looking to do in mobile in the next couple of years.
Yeah, and one thing that I think we should keep in mind there, and Tom, as sort of the expert in this space, can correct me if I'm wrong, but a lot of this kind of secondary discussion that he just talked about is happening in the context of what looks more and more like agency-provided devices. I think when mobility first sort of burst onto the scene 3 or 4 years ago, there was a lot of talk about BYOD, a lot of talk about providing maximum flexibility to federal employees, to agency employees, that might have been a little bit ambitious given the technological and also regulatory framework at the time. And there does appear to have been a little bit of a step back from that. So that's kind of the context of this whole discussion.
Okay. So are there on the mobile side, I'm assuming SOUP and CIOCS being device-oriented contracts may be attractive for this, but there's going to be massive other contracts involved.
So I don't think we'll really see a lot of new mobile device contracts stood up. OMB and GSA had basically at one point said, we already have several contracts in place that you can buy these types of devices and that you should be buying these services through as well. So we're directing you to make sure that you're using these vehicles. So I don't think we're going to see a ton of new contracts being stood up, but I think you are going to see even more increase in activity on some of the major vehicles that people are buying mobile device and mobile services off of.
Okay, and one of the mobile services hopefully will involve some sort of CDM or other security.
I think security is a huge piece, and certainly anything that is going to be with a device that's out in the field that can connect to a different unsecured network, that is certainly going to be something that folks on the government side of the house are very concerned with right now, and they're going to make continued investment, I think, along those mobile security lines.
Okay. Along those lines, let's go to the IoT category and the security issues there.
Sure. Where the security becomes a little bit more complicated. So we as I mentioned earlier, had an event, a briefing on this topic earlier this week, and security was one of the key concerns for both the audience and the panelists that we had there. And one of the real drivers of that is that in an IoT world, in a world where you're looking at nodes and sensors out in a field or out in some environment that are generating data, in many cases, those are not smart devices. And so the security, such as it is at the device level, oftentimes needs to be hardwired. It needs to actually be physically soldered into the chip, which is not a capacity that we currently have in industry, or at least not one that's being widely adopted. So we have a tendency, I think, or certainly I have had a tendency to think of IoT as sort of an offshoot or an expansion of the mobility space, but mobility security concerns are different. They often live at the software level, and here we're talking about something entirely past that. So that's kind of what I hear driving that conversation, or what we hear driving that conversation right now, and it's an interesting question, and one that will need to be better answered, I think, in the not too distant future, if we want to see IoT really brought to bear in government.
Yeah, I think the other concern is, networked devices that were really put into place before security was thought of as a concern. So, you've had, several botnets that have been infecting like IoT connected devices, like security cameras, for example, that are on the network. So there's the Mirai botnet. Recently, there was even a newer one that was announced, and this one was kind of interesting because it would infect a device, and what it would do would not necessarily turn it into something that would act as a vector of attack, but the infection would basically shut down the most common other ports of infection, so that another botnet could not infect that mobile device. So maybe that's a gray hat hacker trying to do us a bit of a service there. But we're now seeing a lot of conversation, particularly out of Homeland Security, around how do we secure these IoT devices, particularly these older devices that maybe weren't built with security in mind. How do we go back and retroactively secure and protect those devices? That is a continued area of concern for government moving forward.
And we see the same challenges and the same concerns over on the VA side as well. So we talked earlier about, you know, they're expanding, let's say, health portfolio. And with that expansion is coming a lot more networked and connected medical devices, you know, things like pacemakers that are getting implanted in veterans that are networked. And there are enormous benefits to that, but it also provides a pretty frightening attack vector. You know, VA talks a lot about building security in from the ground up on systems. This is an area where they really can't afford not to. And so that's, you know, another area where we're seeing significant IoT security questions being raised.
Yeah, and IoT, I think, you know, even outside of the security piece, really ends up being a very interesting topic for government going forward. You know, how do they, how do you assess and measure and learn from what your IoT devices are doing and how they're interacting? How do you identify what are normal patterns of behavior, and how do you identify what are anomalous behavior patterns? And when you start to sense those anomalous, patterns, can you shut down that device right away so that it doesn't become a way that you can infect and impact the larger network? So that is, I think, a very new and interesting area of research that's going on within government right now.
And then, you know, you layer on top of that an expansion, let's say, of an old question, which is what does government do with the data that it generates? You know, leaving security to the side, it's when you look at projections for networked connected devices, what we would call IoT, let's say out by 2020, growth rates from where we are now are almost exponential. And we already live in a world where agencies struggle to deal with the volume of data that they generate and use it to make meaningful decisions or sort of guide where they go in some kind of meaningful way. That challenge multiplies over and over again when you start to look at the number of data generating devices that we're likely to have on network just in the next 5 years. So in addition to all of the security, there's a significant gap to be filled, I think, in the data management and analytics world in order to actually use the IoT devices in a meaningful way and not just have them.
So accumulating data and put it in a closet. And...
Right. You want to avoid
yeah,
that.
Right.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Data's good if you can parse it properly, as you guys are witness to. Thank you for parsing this for us today. Thank you very much for coming in. Chris Wiederman and Tom O'Keefe, market intelligence consultants at Immix Group. Again, find them at immixgroup.com. Look for the blog. It's well worth your time. This is not my day job. I advise companies on all aspects of marketing to the government, leveraging LinkedIn, building subject matter expert platforms, and developing a content marketing program. These guys are really good at content marketing, by the way. Drop me a line at markamtower@gmail.com if you want to chat. And thank you very much for listening to Amtower Off Center.
You've been listening to Amtower Off Center, sponsored by General Dynamics Information Technology. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. Amtower Off Center, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.